All right, so we'll go ahead. I think we've got a everyone here, maybe a few technical problems, but we'll get through that. Okay, well, welcome to our village board meeting. And I'd like to ask the clerk to please take the roll call.
Trustee Bachner?
Here.
Trustee Gillis?
Here.
Trustee Vasquez?
Here.
Trustee Brennan?
Here.
Trustee Johnson?
Here.
Trustee O'Connell?
Here.
President Medusi?
Here. All here. It's just about 7:05. So if I can ask everyone to stand to say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. So we'll now next up is citizens' comment, and I have a few that's written. I don't know if there's anybody that put up on the podium, so if you can let me know.
It's clean.
None? Zero? Okay, don't. All right. I don't know if Joe is Joe O'Connor. Are you on? I don't see Joe.
I'm back here.
Oh, Joe, you're here.
Here.
Well, welcome. I didn't see you.
Okay.
Please step up to the podium. Welcome.
Okay. Very good.
Such a treat.
Good evening, Madam President and Village Board Trustees. My name is Joe O'Connor. I'm a resident. I live at 351 Thatcher. And I know you guys have a busy agenda tonight, 522 pages in the board packet. I don't know if that's standard on Monday night or not, but I'm here to talk about page 418, Traffic and Safety Commission study for a crosswalk on Hawthorne and also a pedestrian curb ramp. The Traffic and Safety Committee approved a crosswalk at Gale and Hawthorne, and they also approved a pedestrian ramp, a south-facing pedestrian ramp on the northeast corner of Thatcher and Hawthorne, and I'm here in support of that. And that's my story, and I'll stick to it.
Okay. Well. Very good, because I appreciate you letting us know. We'll get to it probably soon, because it's right after our consent agenda. So we'll vote on it at that point in time.
Okay. So, well, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Jan, I know you're up. We could wait for 7C or 9A, or you can come to the podium and speak now. All right. That doesn't give me. Okay. We'll wait. Johan is
he's here.
Here we go. Yes, please. I don't know what you wanted to speak about, so I'll just assume it's general.
Madam President, trustees, welcome. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Johan Bass. I live at 8141 Lake Street, and I have lived in the village for 23 years. Served on the flood task force of 2008 until 2011, served as co-leader for the Metro Rail advocacy. I have just stepped down as Traffic and Safety Commissioner. My term ends next May, and so having accepted a position as visiting Professor McGill for the next academic year, I will no longer be part of our community, and therefore I resigned voluntarily. Tonight, I want to speak on the Stormwater Master Plan. And this is a matter which is close to my heart because I have been participating in this undertaking, as I say, from 2008 until 2011. I was part of the task force appointed by President Paris at the time, and at that time we had a catastrophic hurricane flood that made land in Galveston, and by some climate change freak of nature, that water current raised into very high levels and dumped in Chicago and flooded our village with many, many inches of water. At that time, the flood had gone overland all the way to Thatcher from the river on Lake Street. It went on Chicago Avenue all the way into residential areas and so on. And at that time, kayaking residents from their homes for evacuation of the entire neighborhood was the most catastrophic one in my 23 years of living here. What that means is that now today we have increased climate change, unpredictable weather patterns, rain patterns, and as we speak, we have experienced tornadoes in our area just last week. And of course, we stand under a flood warning even now. These kinds of circumstances are clearly things that the three village engineers that we had subsequent to that experience and the two administrators and awaiting a third one do not have living memory of. And therefore, their experience with that catastrophic one is outside of their knowledge base. So at best, they can make speculative judgments. I was perturbed to notice that our own village engineer had made speculations and judgments, obviously to the best of his professional knowledge, but they were uninformed by these kinds of catastrophic experiences that came to our village. River Forest is prone to flooding, reads the first sentence in a strategic plan of the published documents of our village. I don't accept that. 50-year plans are the kinds of things that we need, and we need to do that not looking at what our budget can bear for today or if sandbagging pumps and other temporary measures, which would be like buckets of dropping under dripping roofs, would be the temporary solutions to flooding in our village. I propose that we think substantively for the next 50-year solution. Certainly, if Holland can have a century-old stemming of oceans at their borders, then clearly River Forest with its 10,000 village inhabitants can make a permanent or near permanent solution. So therefore, I would like for you to consider that we make extraordinary efforts at this opportune time when the presidential infrastructure plan seems to be regaining momentum and might pass, as we think, with full support from the Senate. I would encourage you to think about near permanent abatement and not solutions that will fit our 10-year or other medium-term solutions. What can we do? I would propose that the fact that the village preserve would not allow for any clearance or mitigation in the riverbeds as part of that, that question might lead us to look at retention ponds in our ravine plains. Let us ask for exceptions for temporary or permanent berms along the river that the opportunity for abatement and total abatement or near total abatement from homes might be the one solution. Another feature is that we have on the 300 block of Chicago Avenue, a single home where after they had implemented all three of our village recommendations for abating their overland flooding at the cost of $25,000, that they still had the same problem. That is obviously unacceptable. And perhaps we should really think about creative solutions, whether they be urban-friendly types of vegetation and beyond, so that the overland flooding might not be the kind of thing that will dam up and so on. We are unfortunately also still at the behest of our single dual system stormwater drainage system. When I was on the flood committee, we had implemented a phased implementation of looking at the stormwater system and separating out stormwater and sewer. At this point, we have them in combined, and only a small section of that of the village happens to have the dual system. We understood at the time that progressively the village would implement this dual system, a sewer system, a stormwater system for the rest of the village. And as far as I can look at your documents, there is no substantial discussion of a complete and comprehensive re-evaluation and implementation of these dual system that would help us along. It's temporary, or at least it's in part, but not comprehensive at this time. So I encourage you, please, to go ahead and reconsider that. The other feature is that we do have subterranean water flows, and that is an issue that has not come to the attention of the village. And I would like to have this be noted, that we have subterranean water streams that do go under our village, and that is often not looked at as part of our stormwater system. So with all those comments, my dear friends, as a 23-year resident of this village and hoping to live here for the next 23, I really strongly urge you, my friends, to take a 50-year view of not just solutions for the time being, midterm, but comprehensive, long-term abatement solutions that will be permanent. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Johan.
Johan, can I just ask a question? Have you shared your, you know, historical information and opinions with the our contractor that's doing the retired to the stormwater master plan?
The question is, have I shared my historical information with a contractor? If I'm not mistaken, Christopher Burke is the one and only contractor that we've had from 2008. And if I remember correctly, they were the firm that helped us with that. And no, I have not shared that with them. I assumed that because they were the original engineers, that this is part and parcel of their documentation. For the record, you need to then have them share whatever you think is valuable of what I said this evening with them. Just as a matter of interest, I would really like to encourage us also to think of our plan for call for proposals to be a lot more intentional, aggressive, and versatile. It's clear that when a single firm has their monopoly on the engineering, then there is no idea of fresh ideas coming forward, or there's the possibility of us falling into a trap of repeating or overlooking blind spots that we might not be aware of. Okay. So I would like to encourage that.
Yeah, it was bad. Thank you, Johan, okay. And good luck to you on Miguel. I think I would like you to add your opinions and your thoughts to I think we're having more resident meetings, and so
we've had two resident meetings so far, but we have a questionnaire going out. And Johan, we would certainly encourage you to reach out to Jeff Lawson, the village's engineer. We'd be happy to take that input and the points that you've raised tonight and incorporate that as part of the plan. This is a very long study on purpose. It's intended to be very intentional and comprehensive, and so I appreciate you sharing those comments with us tonight. Jeff's here in the audience and has heard everything that you've said, but to the extent that there's anything else that you want to share, please feel free to reach out.
Yep. I think it's important. Okay, very good. Thank you. Up next is Catherine Christmas. I believe she is on Zoom.
I'm on Zoom. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. President Ducey and Village Trustees, thank you very much for your time. My name is Catherine Christmas, and I live at 601 Bonnie Bray. I was a citizen member of the Deer Management Ad Hoc Committee, and I'm one of the writers of the Alternative Deer Management Report that is posted on the Village website. I'm speaking today to call attention to an important unfulfilled duty of the Deer Committee. Board Resolution 2003 required that the committee plan at least one community forum to educate residents on the importance of a deer management program. This did not happen. While COVID made public meetings a challenge, given the recent lifting of restrictions, there's no reason not to fulfill this obligation before the trustees vote on this topic. I propose that the two committee groups, Pro-Call and Pro-Alternatives to Culling, present their respective reports to the board and the public in a committee of the whole meeting. Given that summer vacation plans are already in place, I request that this be done after August. As there is also no notable external time pressure related to this topic, I'm not requesting a date to be put on the calendar, but only that a commitment be made to host a committee of the whole meeting, as just described, before vote takes place. Such a meeting would benefit the entire community and pave the way for greater acceptance of whatever deer management plan is eventually enacted. It would also benefit the new trustees to participate in village-run discussions on this topic, but will eventually be voting on it. The board included a public forum requirement in the original resolution to ensure that the community would be as informed as possible on this topic. Nothing has changed to make this goal less relevant. Thank you very much for your time and attention.
No, yeah, you're up. Okay, thank you, Catherine. And I agree. We will, I think the idea of a committee of the whole meeting, I think, is a good one. I was just asking Lisa about the community forum and the obligation under the community forum. I know we're having some technical issues.
Yeah, sorry, I had to turn my microphone on. Did the Deer Committee hold the public forum?
No. Oh, okay. Okay. All right. And then that's a great feedback, Catherine. So we should do that. And I think the idea of having, the committee both talk about each of their reports, I think, is a good one. So I think I heard you right, you thought maybe after the summer to make sure that we get enough people. I didn't hear.
Well, my assumption is because this just occurred to me when going through some of the outcomes of the committee and what we did and didn't do. And now that COVID rules have changed so dramatically, it struck me as a good opportunity. My thought regarding the month is just the fact that people would have to prepare to present. And of course, we'd want people to be there, and it's already end of June. So I think, it would be difficult for both groups, even for the presenters, to commit to being able to present.
Yep. Okay. Agreed and understood. So we'll make that one of our priorities moving forward. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Phyllis.
Hi. I had trouble getting on. Hi, everybody. I'm Phyllis Rubin. I live at 411 Ashland Avenue, just south of the Lake and Laser Project. That's one thing I want to talk about. I looked on the website. It looks like the last month it had not been updated. It had sort of been updated now. And last month they had 6 units sold, now with a 7th pending. It sounds like the 7th one is sold. That's great. I also saw the, maybe all of you did, this blurb in the, there was a pamphlet in one of the Sunday Tribunes of units being sold around the city, and Lake and Laser was in it. So maybe that will get more people. That would be nice if it got built. I have a question. Last month, I asked a lot of questions, and I had not sent in something so that you could actually read them and know what they were. I will do better on that next month. But one of my questions was not answered, because people in the building are wondering if radon is one of the gases expected to come out of the ground on that site. We'd like to know. And I, again, on the website, I'm going to look at it right now. It says that there are, the developer continues working to address the remaining building permit review comments. What are they? And when will that be addressed so that the permit will be given? That's one question about one permit. Then there's the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District permit. And they say it's anticipated to be issued within the near future. They're giving you a report today. I hope they'll tell you that they now have it. If they don't, when is the near future? I'd like some. I think it would be good to have. Remember my analogy about if you're getting a bathroom done or a kitchen done, and you keep being told, well, not this week, next week, and then you get not next week in 2 weeks. You need to know that this is going to get built. So we would all like some answers here. And I have to tell you, I intended to go past the site to see if anything's being done. They were supposed to start excavating below ground the beginning of June. Then they said the middle of June. It is now the end of June. I only just came back into town, so I haven't really checked it, but I don't think anything's being done. So, board, you need to know what's going on and when it's going to be done, because if it keeps getting pushed off, that is not okay. So that's that. Those are my comments and questions about the Lake and Latham project. I want to make one other comment, and that is about someone who is asking to come onto one of your commissions, the Zoning Commission. And I believe this is somebody who has a tie to West Cook News, which is a not a reliable, not a respectable news. I don't know if you want to call it a newspaper. I think if this person comes onto the Zoning Commission, then you are not vetting people good enough to come onto our commissions. So I want you to look really closely at that, so the people who aren't spreading rumors around the village also are allowed to come onto our commission. Okay, I'm done. Thank you.
All right, we'll get you those three questions about Rayon and the permit. All right, thanks. Margie.
Can you hear me? I'm Margie Sikander, 531 River Oaks Drive. I wanted to comment on the appointment process, a couple of questions on Lake and Lathrop, questions on the village legal bill for the May hearing on unfair labor practices, and also a comment on the search committee. On the appointment process, the board discussed in February 22nd, the board indicated support for reviewing the appointment process. John Grant offered a roadmap for us. President Ducey wanted to ensure the process was open and transparent as possible. And the current trustees, O'Connell, Brennan, Bachner, Vasquez, all expressed support to discuss and pursue this topic. President Ducey also stated that if the board can improve it, they will. Thus far, holding a resident meeting on June 2nd to gather recommendations and listen, and the sharing of applications of those nominated are good first steps. Thank you. However, the board's role is to advise and consent. Did the board see all applications? Did the board advise the president on any appointments? 60% of the 28 appointments are for 4 to 5 years. The boards are currently functioning and acting and voting with commissioners whose terms expired April 30th. In review of the nominees, and in the interest of full disclosure, one nominee was a large donor to President Odusi's campaign, giving $1,000. Now that person is nominated for two appointments to two key boards in our village. I hope that information was shared with the board. Another nominee for appointment to the ZBA was the centerpiece of an article by Dan Proff's pay-to-print smear machine called West Cook News. Other qualified candidates applied for the ZBA, but were not selected. Were you aware of that? Did you see those applications? We are partway into a review of the appointment process. If you vote for all of these appointments, you're precluding change to the appointment process. If you didn't advise on the nominees, then you, trustees, didn't satisfy your duty to residents to advise the president. Regarding Lincoln Lathrop, the excavation construction was, I believe, to begin in early June and the vertical construction in August. So I have questions, which I hope will be addressed. What's the status of the MWRD permit, which I'm guessing is a challenge always? What's the status of IEPA approval and its NFR letter? What about the village permit? Acting Administrator Shiner's report of June 24th to the village board about the resubmittal by the developer was unclear. Was that something that happened previously or since the last update from Lincoln Lathrop? On May 24th, the developer's rep stated the barriers to be used are concrete for the primary part of the barrier. Some areas will use plastic and PVC pipes in a grid to vent gases up to 50 feet to the roof and the outside. What's the current status and the timetable on this project? If the Sheridan took 30 months from the time construction permit to occupancy permit, then Lake and Laser appears on track for 2024 occupancy. The village approved the project in 2016. Regarding the $26,000 and change legal bill for the May hearing on unfair labor practices, what was the outcome of the hearing? Was it related to an individual who filed suit last year? And what else can be shared? Regarding the status of the search committee for village administrator, we need to conduct a search with resident input. The job is too important and too seldom occurs to not conduct a thorough search. And lastly, just a side note on the SMP, the Stormwater Management Plan. I did have a chance to attend that on Tuesday. The contractors took no notes, took no record of who really attended. I understand they're coming out with a survey or a questionnaire. Jeff Loester was great at answering our questions, but there was no presentation. I did give him feedback on that, and I agree wholeheartedly with what Johan Bass is suggesting. Thank you for the chance to comment.
Okay, thank you, Margie. All right, Jim Sager.
Hi, I'm Jan Sager. Tonight, the president is presenting her appointments and the Board of Trustees is tasked with voting. The president's appointees have impressive credentials and are from all areas of town. Our village government relies on active residents who graciously and tirelessly volunteer their time and effort to sustain the quality of our community. Their insights, experience, and expertise help the board govern River Forest more effectively and efficiently. Our advisory boards and commissions are most functional with full memberships. Without appointments, especially those that are vacant, there can be additional cost of money and time to residents and business owners. We should all understand the need to appoint and reappoint as soon as possible. The list seems long, but how does it compare to prior years? Did anyone ask our village president for context? One of the appointments to fill a vacancy is on the Sustainability Commission, which seems like it just came up recently. Things do have a way of happening out of a clear blue sky. The process is by ordinance and should not be tabled now or in the future. Hitting the pause button is counterproductive and will result in a broken system. I have 9A if you want me to go to that.
Sure.
Okay, that's consideration recommendations regarding board and committee, commission appointments. Thank you to Lisa Shaner for leading the June 2nd meeting and for your presentations then and what you'll do tonight. The need to appoint and reappoint volunteers to our commissions is up to the village president and the board of trustees. And the goal is to ensure the process is transparent, well-documented, and available for all residents. A review of other communities gives us good examples of volunteer applications, documentations, and communication of process steps, methods of outreach, and an example of a manual that we can adapt, all to achieve our goals. Suggestions at this June 2nd meeting were examples of the need for clearer communication, not a broken appointment process. In the list of goals, we should agree consistent language is critical. The use of alternative terms like enabling language, which is merely the ordinances, only serves to mislead, especially when that term seems to be the exception and not the trend. Finally, I appreciate that all community members are encouraged to research topics and then share those findings during public comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Jan. Okay, that concludes our public comment. So I will go ahead and now ask the elected officials for their comments and announcements. So we'll start with Trustee O'Connell.
Thank you. Good evening. A couple of things. First off, we have the holiday weekend coming up upon us, and I hope everyone has a safe and happy 4th of July weekend. Use your best judgment when having functions and operating in the community. Just a couple of things. I lost my train of thought. I'm gonna pass. So.
We'll come back to you.
Yeah, get back to me.
No worries. But happy 4th of July. Okay, Trustee Johnson.
Thank you. First of all, I just want to wish everyone an upcoming happy holiday, I'm going to say season, but really I just mean coming up and 4th of July.
Right.
I want to say that I'm enamored by, as one of the new trustees, all the community engagement. I'm excited to see all the people here today and the people at the Zoom. And, you know, I want them to understand that we're definitely listening and is our expectation that we will take their comments and thoroughly discuss them and ensure that we get about an adequate result. And that's all I have to say.
Yeah, great, thanks. Okay, Trustee Brennan.
Yeah, thank you. I have two things. The first is some fun news. I wanted to report that this past spring, or a couple months late, yet another one of River Forest's students won an honor at the One Earth Film Festival
wow.
Young Filmmakers Contest. That is Marin Chalmers, who won an honorable mention at the middle school level with her 3-minute film entitled Sundiaca, about wildlife and ecosystems. And Marin attends Roosevelt Middle School. As background, Roosevelt has had a winner or an honorable mention every year since the first year, except for the first year in 2016. And all of those students who've won those honors have been in Corey Cadlett's class. His science class. He's been a huge proponent of his students participating. So I wanted to ask if, as we've done in the past, the village board and president can invite this student in to be honored, if we can watch her 3-minute film. And it would be appropriate, I think, to also to invite Mr. Cadlick in as well, since he's been our conduit.
Yeah, thank you. Absolutely.
Great. And then the second thing is that there was an article in the Wednesday Journal at the beginning of June about the potential sale of a piece of Dominican's Priory campus. And it's caused a lot of discussion and questions among residents about what this is, what the options are for this
project, what the zoning is, what the village's participation is. I don't have the answers. We haven't discussed it at the board level. And so I was going to ask, is it appropriate or possible if we can ask the Economic Development Commission to assess this property and advise the village board on what the situation is, on what the economic and community impact of the various development options might be?
Yeah, we absolutely can, but the comprehensive plan is what guides our land use, and right now the comprehensive plan says it's a PRI, which is public recreational institution. So we can have all those discussions with the Economic Development Commission. The question then becomes, are we prepared to rezone the property to commercial or residential? And that's a possibility in the future. I think we spent enormous amount of money and time and energy going through that comprehensive plan. I think it took us nearly 3 to 4 years with a lot of public input, and that was a big piece of property that we talked about. And I think the community agreed to keep it as a PRI. So that's why the comments in the Northern Journal was such that we were following our comprehensive plan, which I think was the right answer at this point in time. And so I think, again, we've no issues with bringing it up to the Economic Development Commission, but I think they also know what the comprehensive plan looks like. So certainly we'll put that on the agenda for their point of view. I mean, there are no issues about their point of view, but I think they'll probably come to the same conclusion as we all have, is that we have to follow our comprehensive plan at this moment.
Yeah, I'd like to hear what the options are, what the village's options are. And
they're simple. It's either PRI or it's commercial residential, how you want to rezone it. I mean, it's really no other options, but
a little bit deeper than that, just, you know, and so what would the impact be of those decisions, you know, because there are so
big.
Few, yeah.
Well, that's what
yeah.
the comprehensive plan was. See, Katie, that's why we spent enormous amount of time and energy developing the comprehensive plan. You went to many of those public meetings in Concordia. It was to discuss just that.
Yeah.
Okay, it was, if this stays public and non-taxable, the consequences are just that. If we make it private and taxable, then of course it provides other values to the village, but it takes away certain things that we enjoy, like green space and other you know, valuable that we get from it. So that had been discussed in detail. I mean,
I think that's very important. I mean, you know, they can sit around the table and then come up with all sorts of ideas
yeah.
for an 8-acre parcel piece of property. The question is, at this table is, do we want to abide by the comprehensive plan and keep the zoning as it is, or do we want to do something else? I mean, you can come up with a gazillion plans
yeah.
to do something with it. I mean, you know, it's a great commercial piece of property. It's a great residential piece of property. The question is, do we want that to be there?
Right.
And according to our comprehensive plan, we said, no, we don't.
Right.
We want it to be public recreational institution. And so if we want to go back and change that, then that's another conversation. But to get them into a conversation, I you know, they can talk about it all they want. What is it we want them to do? We have to give them direction.
Well, I agree with you, Bob. I think, again, they can have the conversation. You're right. It's going to come back to us. So, I mean, so that's why I don't have an issue with having them talk about the options, because they're going to go back to the comprehensive plan and look at the plan and then discuss the options, which is okay. We can always address it. But the decision will then come back to us. Right? And that was, that was a major decision and vote for the board. So, okay. But, all right. So, very good. Bob, you want to, or are we coming back? You haven't remembered. Okay. Okay, John, anything as a clerk?
Okay.
Very good.
Okay. Yes. Good evening, everyone. First, I want to join my fellow trustees in wishing everybody a happy and safe July 4th. I have three items to talk about, all related to age-friendly. The first one is, since our last meeting, we had the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus Age-Friendly Communities Collaborative met on June the 3rd. This is the meeting that President Ducci chairs. At that meeting, there was discussions of the Planning and Aging providing free consulting work for municipalities to get their age-friendly initiatives going. I'm happy to say that we're ahead of the schedule, so they're not ready to work with us in respect that they have the original beginning initiatives, so we're farther beyond that. So, but they will, they are planning to provide some additional trainings for municipalities that are ahead of the game, so to speak. We also heard from the City of Woodstock, they had their age-friendly action plan, so it was good to hear from them, of course. Although their plan was really directed to their municipality, there were some good ideas about the process they went through to get there. And one of the key things that they talked about was the needs assessment and the survey that, of course, we're in the process of doing. With that segue, our age-friendly committee met, too, on this past month. We're getting really close in finalizing our survey questions, so I'm hoping at this next meeting we'll be able to reach conclusion on that. And last but not least, the Neighborhood Age Friendly Collaborative, which was a spinoff from the Mayor's Metropolitan Caucus Age Friendly Collaborative. And these are the local Village, Oak Park, Maywood, Forest Park, and River Forest, the Austin community, and still open to our neighboring villages to try to see what we can do regionally to support our age-friendly initiatives. We didn't get, basically this meeting was really a reacclimation since the elections. New people have been elected in their respective positions, so this was more like getting together again to renew the commitment and then talk about some of the initiatives we as villages are doing. And so, but we all were committed to continue that. So that's good news. So, okay, that's it. Thank you.
Great, thanks. That's great, Russ, thanks. Trustee Gill?
Hello. Yes, another happy 4th of July. Please be safe, be healthy.
Be cool.
Be cool, exactly. not use firecrackers in our hands and that kind of thing. But anyway, I just have two things. I was lucky enough to represent the Village of River Forest along with the mayor of Oak Park, Vicki Skaman, and Don Harmon in kicking off construction of the Oak Park River Forest Infant Welfare Society building. They are moving from Lake Street to Madison. They actually purchased a building. They are actually able to, they purchased it with donations. They have some very generous donors. And they have most of the budget to do the renovation. So they were celebrating the fact that, you know, they are set to move through a aggressive remodel of the space so that they can move in a year, I think, because they are up on their other lease. So thank you very much, you know, Kathy, for recommending me to represent the village, because I have been a member of the Oak Park River Forest and Welfare Society for over 20 years. So it was really, really great to kind of play that dual role. Secondly, I attended West Central Municipal Conference training that was held in Elmwood Park for newly elected officials. I found it very informative, insightful. I met a lot of other elected officials from our surrounding neighborhoods, and you know, it's great to see the collaboration that we, you know, have together. It took place in Elmwood Park at their town hall. So again, thank you for that opportunity to participate in that to get me ready for this role as a relative newbie. So thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Good. You're well educated. Thanks. Trustee Backner.
Yeah, so I'd like to start off with a land acknowledgement. So as we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on lands that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, the Menominee, the Potawatomi nations, and more. And we will remember our nation's history and honor the Native people stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. And to that end, somebody earlier today asked me how my past few weeks have been. I said it was wonderful because I was one of the things I was able to participate in. I hope everybody got an opportunity to do something around Juneteenth in the past couple of weekends. And so it was really wonderful to be able to not just celebrate Juneteenth, but to see our community, friends and partners and family together, give real hugs. And as one person said it, see everyone in 3D. So happy Juneteenth and happy 4th of July. I wanted to give a quick update on our equity advisory group. We have now met twice and have been able to approve guidelines for discussion for our dialogues and have a working group set on finalizing our definitions for diversity, equity, inclusion. We also provided the group with additional key terms that are used in diversity, equity, inclusion spaces. And what we have been focused on with Trustee Johnson and Chairman Shiner on this, both co-chairs of the group, is one part education around DEI, one part education around the village itself, and then one part getting to the work of the group at hand. So as I continue to say, it's a marathon, not a sprint, but I'm very fortunate to have the people there in the room and have been able to hear and share so many different ideas from the community. So very happy about that. I would like to also, part of the conversation that Trustee Brennan, Trustee O'Connell, and President Ducci had around the Priory sale, I think in my mind, it probably, there was an assumption that would always stay public. The idea that it is potentially up for sale, potentially private, I think brings a huge opportunity to River Forest. I do think that it's something we should consider, especially when we're thinking about the tax rolls for the community. When we're thinking about affordable housing, it makes it, you know, we have a hard time with that in River Forest, as we know, and this could be something where if we have multi-use, there are some great possibilities here. And I think that for the right kind of project, that I'd be willing to amend that comprehensive plan. Let's see, I think that is it for me.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for the input. I don't really have much to add other than the happy 4th of July. I do want to give just a quick update on Village Administrator's recruitment. We have asked West Central Municipal Conference, who does recruiting in this area for Village Administrators, to give us some, resumes and contacts that are around the, surrounding area. And so my hope is to take those, basically those resumes, and then create kind of a trustee work group, if you will, an advisory group to help us pick the right village administrator. So more to come on that, but that process is starting and it's the wheels are in motion. We are also, I don't know if it's official, I could say about the fire chief, right?
Coming soon.
But yeah, I want to make sure that you all are going to be part of that process. So we'll make sure that you get all of it. But it's an important job for us, and we acknowledge it, and that's why all the village trustees and clerk will be involved with it. Okay, so with that, I will go ahead and ask to get a motion for the consent agenda for approval of A through
Oh.
I'd like to make a motion to approve the consent agenda, items A through E and G through O.
What are you taking off?
What?
Or one, two.
Oh, we see Paul.
Okay. You want to take F off? Okay. What the heck?
Second.
All right, very good.
Okay.
All right. So A through E and G through. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second.
Okay. All right. Any questions on those? Hearing none, I'll ask the clerk to please read the consented items and then take the vote.
Consent agenda item A, Village Board Trustee Meeting Minutes, May 24th, 2021. The executive session meeting minutes, May 24th, 2021. C, National Railway Safety Week Proclamation. D, approval of resolution rejecting all bids received for the Village of River Forest 202 Green Alley Improvement Project and authorization the rebidding of the project resolution. C, award of contract to V3 Companies for Design Alley Design for a cost not to exceed $145,665. G, award of bid and contract to Crown Industries Limited for the Fuel System Improvement Project in the amount of $141,000. H, right-of-way encroachment waiver and agreement for an irrigation system located at 706 Franklin. I, right-of-way encroachment waiver and agreement for irrigation system located at 605 Park. J, right-of-way encroachment waiver and agreement for a fence located at 500 William. K, monthly department reports. L, May financial reports. M, accounts payable May 2021, $1,663,289.63. N, performance measurement report. And O, village administrator's report. Okay. Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Do you vote on this, President?
No. I don't vote. No, it's not no for that. I just don't.
Okay.
Vote. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So then that brings us to item F, which is the approval of payments to Clerk Bird Smith. So if I can ask trustee to move and then one to second, and we'll discuss it.
Make a motion to approve the payment to Clark Baird Smith LLP for legal services in the amount of $26,787.50.
Second.
Okay.
I just wanted to ask a question. So I think I know the answer to it, but I think one of the residents brought it up. Is this related to litigation regarding personnel?
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. That's my question. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. F, approval of payment to Clark Baird Smith LLP for legal services in the amount of $26,787.50. Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes. Yeah.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Okay, item six is the consent item for separate consideration. So if I can have a trustee move and second, another second, and then.
I move to approve a payment from the general fund to McDonald's Caravitis for $31.89.
Second.
Second.
Okay, any comments?
I'd ask clerk not to call my name due to a conflict with my employer.
Okay.
Oh. Okay. Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Bob abstained.
Yeah.
But Trustee O'Connell abstained.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Oopsie. What the heck? All right. Okay. Well, we're up on our next item, which is the recommendations of boards, commissions, and committees. And I am really delighted to have our the leadership of Trinity High School. Welcome to our community room. We're glad you're here, and we're glad you're in River Forest.
Thank you.
President Ducey, do you want me to make a motion first?
Oh, yeah. Well, I forgot about it. This is a big ordinance. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'd like to move to approve an ordinance granting an amendment to a plan development permit for Trinity High School located at 7574 Division Street.
Second.
I'm so anxious to have you guys up there. I completely forgot. So, welcome.
Thank you. Before we start, am I getting something to change? Okay. Then I'll go through the intro. You have a little time on this.
Right.
My name is Laura Curley. Thank you, Madam President and trustees. I'm the current president at Trinity High School, and it is an honor to be here today. We are here. Trinity High School is seeking approval of construction of a building that will link our current academic building with our current athletic facility and house a new elevator, as well as improve the exterior and enable more regular and secured use of our outside. Currently, the buildings are confusing to navigate from the parking lot. If you've ever tried to do that, I walked in the wrong door for my job interview. Mm-hmm. The students have to traverse between the buildings during all kinds of weather on any given school day. And the current elevator in the Trinity High School building was installed in the 1920s. The goals of the project include improving the accessibility of our buildings, improving safety for anyone in the buildings, and improving the usability of our outdoor space. What you see here is the Trinity High School property bounded by Division, Lathrop, Berkshire, and Jackson. The site of the construction would be confined to that red outlined area you see. It's important to note that the facade on Division and Lathrop will remain unchanged. This, however, will change. The athletic facility houses all our dance classes. That's the building on the left. Daily, as I said, students need to go outside in all sorts of weather. The entrance where that blue awning is the exterior staircase. Members of the community who bring their children to Park District events that we house in our gymnasium have to traverse that outside dark exterior staircase. So I want you to keep these pictures in mind because those two pictures are what you're about to see in the new version. This will be the new view from the parking lot. You can see the project, the lower down square linking the two buildings, the tall square that is where our elevator was going to be, and of course the beautiful wrought iron that demarks the outdoor meeting space and courtyard. When this proposal is complete, when this building is complete, if you park in our parking lot, you will rightly this time go into the large entrance under the portico of the athletic facility and then walk indoors directed by signage to the lower level gymnasium. And you, if you are a parent with a stroller bringing the little ones, you will be able to use the elevator to get there. This is a view of the project from inside the new courtyard. Right now, it's strictly concrete out there. You can clearly see the connecting link, which features a green roof, the elevator building, and the new courtyard, which has permeable pavers, native plantings, and grasses. This slide serves to show the improved pedestrian movement up and down, as well as across. You can see that between the elevator lobby section and the corridor section there, that thick wall is a new added fire door. This slide then serves to show that the elevator addition will not add any height to the building. In fact, it will be flush with the current height of the building as it stands. So during our conversations with the Development Review Board, we were made aware of three things that they wanted us to address. The first is a matter of the exterior building materials. The Development Review Board asked for specific information about the amount and the durability of the EFIS system that we would be using. If you look at this section, the part that's outside and in kind of a purplish, that is the only part of the EFIS that will be actually adjacent to a pedestrian walkway. All the other EFIS that's at grade level will be behind landscaping, and in one case, behind a transformer. So nobody will be touching that EFIS. There are 103 linear feet at grade level. 70 of those are EFIS because the other 33 are glass. And then of those, only 14 are accessible by a walkway. Regarding the durability of the EFIS, I skipped my page, sorry. The first 7'6" of the building, Trinity will be using what's called ultra high impact resistant EFIS. We're told that it's standard practice in all EFIS systems that they're using this new version, and it's standard to go up to 6 feet. We will be raising it to 7'6" because that's the natural break in our building, and we want it to remain, the visual to remain some continuity there. Prior to our development review board hearing, Mr. Crosby did some independent investigation and indicated to the board that the high impact at 7'6" is a good product to use, and this is the product that the DRB found to be acceptable for us. Again, in this exterior view, you can see there's very little space where that EFIS at grade level is actually accessible that would cause any pedestrian traffic near it. The concern is that EFIS could deteriorate more quickly. And we are being assured by Mr. Crosby and by the builder and architect that this new grade with the ultra high impact, considering it's only regular pedestrian traffic, will not be a problem. Next is the logistics plan. This question was raised, concerned about neighborhood parking and traffic. Berglund Construction has requested 38 spaces that will cover the laydown of the materials and worker parking. That's the parking spaces you see in yellow. They were previously used by faculty and staff, and their parking has been relocated elsewhere in the lot. This leaves 167 spots in our lot. Historically, this is more than sufficient for use by students, faculty, and visitors, and our buses. Berglund has been told there will be no construction parking on the surrounding streets, and we will continue, as we always do, to monitor student parking. We're very fortunate. We have a number of neighbors that if they see a student parking where they shouldn't, they will call us, and we will be out there at the end of the day to make sure that student knows they're not supposed to park there. Once the building is complete, there will be no reduction of parking and there will be no change of the traffic flow. The last concern raised was actually not by the DRB, but by some friends of Trinity, and that was they were concerned about the number of trees that were being impacted. You can see in that area, there are three trees. Those three trees necessarily must be removed for our construction to take place, but at the end of the construction, we will be planting three trees. We have more than 100 trees between the parkway and our property on this block. And so the net change of the number of trees is zero. In closing, we'd like to thank the Village Board for the many years of cooperative and collaborative relationships we've had. We especially would like to thank the Development Review Board, Frank Martin, and of course, Lisa, for kind of shepherding us through this process. Trinity High School prides ourselves on being good neighbors and having good relationships with our neighbors. In fact, we had a neighbor meeting, a resident meeting on March 11th that resulted in absolutely only positive feedback on the project. I'm going to conclude this presentation paraphrasing from John Houseel's report. He's the village's planning consultant. He says, overall, the proposed Trinity High School link addition and courtyard renovation is consistent with the comprehensive plan of the village and will improve the pedestrian environment, overall appearance, safety, and functionality of the space. It incorporates green and sustainable practices, requires no site development allowances, and has little visual impact from the nearby properties. And that is all I have. I'm ready to take questions if anyone has any.
Yes, sure.
And we can look at this pretty picture while we do.
Yeah, it is a beautiful picture. Yeah. I just have one question. So I've coached many a basketball team down those dark stairs. So I'm very familiar with it. And I've also been very concerned about the fact that if I, you know, I'm watching one set of the team, and then other people either leaving early, they go down that dark path, and mm-hmm. or they come up the stairs, and it's also maybe during the wintertime, and it's very slippery, and you're worried they're going to fall down the stairs. So I think this is a great thing. I would ask that, so keeping in mind the new description, parents would pick up their kids from that front area, mm-hmm. and then I know that also from when I was holding practices there, you know, there were times that, you know, you guys had to shut down at a certain time, which makes sense. Will the lights be on at a certain period, or how is that?
As long as there's somebody in the building, the lights will be on.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really nice. It's going to be a nice improvement to the campus. What's the timing in terms of start to finish on construction?
We hope to start tomorrow. And we've been assured it'll be finished before we go home for Christmas break.
Okay.
Question.
Yes.
Hi. So I just want to make sure. It sounds like in the DRB session, they had asked, they approved this with several conditions,
mm-hmm.
right? The facade material, condition number two, facade material from grade level to height, seven
right.
feet, 6 inches, shall consist of the Stotherm Psy Wall XPS. Mm-hmm. So is that what you presented?
Yes, ma'am.
Thing? Okay, wonderful. Thank you for that information. And then the other question that I have is, it sounds like you've taken accessibility into consideration here, which is wonderful. I'm looking at the renderings that you presented to us in our packet in here. Some of these doors do look heavy, and I want to make sure, will you have buttons for people who
yep.
need that?
Any door that is heavy will definitely have a button. I think that's actually standard on construction now. So, yeah, that's not even something we need to think about. It's a standard ad. Right.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
I learned from listening to the audio of the DRB discussion that when trees are removed,
mm-hmm.
that we measure by caliper by caliper.
That's correct.
So it's not tree to tree. If
correct.
You're taking out a big tree, it doesn't mean you can plant a little tree and replace that. So, and there was something in
correct.
The audio about, although you're putting in three new trees, you still have to, or paying
right.
a fine or a fee. I don't know if it's fine.
Right.
Fee.
There's a fee in the village ordinance because it is caliper by caliper. If you're taking out a 12-inch diameter tree and replacing it with a 3-inch, you still have 9 inches to make up somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so the differential, because we have so many trees already, we don't, caliper by caliper, they want us to plant 14 trees. And if you saw that overhead property, there's just not room. So we will be making a contribution to the fund in River Forest that pays for new trees in other locations. So we'll be putting in three new trees, and then we'll be making a donation to offset the expense of planting other trees around the village.
Yep. Thank you for clarifying and explaining.
Any further questions from trustees or John?
I just have a comment, if I may, because I just wanted to also applaud Trinity for using, you know, kind of like truly thinking about it from a sustainability perspective with the green roof and the permeable pavers and the like. That's obviously another passion of many of us on the across the village, and it's good to see that. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. It's an important, if you know anything about the nuns who founded Trinity, it's important to us as well.
Yeah, just one quick comment. First of all, I love the plan. It looks really nice. Second of all, I also do want to thank you for being a good neighbor. We don't always find that to be the case, but we have with you. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, like I said, we're happy that you're here in River Forest. You're not only a great neighbor, it's just wonderful. I'm glad we have an all-girls school here in River Forest. So. I don't think the trustees have any further questions. I think it was well presented. Thank you so much for that. I think it was well received at the Development Review Board,
mm-hmm.
even though they had conditions. I think that's normal. So thank you for that. And thank you for all your diligence, you know, working with the village and being, you know, conscious about things that are important to us, like, as Lisa said, you know, sustainability efforts and so forth. So thank you on that. So with that, I'll ask the clerk to please take the vote for passing this ordinance.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
All right. Well, congratulations. It's the unanimous vote. So congratulations. Good luck to you. I know it was a big capital push, so that was great. Thank you. You wouldn't hurt our feelings if you left, so go ahead. we completely understand that.
They can right. celebrate. They can go celebrate.
They can go celebrate.
Thank you.
Okay, good night. All right, so up next is some traffic and safety commission's recommendations. We could take this all together, or we could take them one at a time. Should we take them one at a time? Lisa?
Or, I think you can take them. They're relatively non-controversial, so you can take them all at one time. We're seeking consensus.
Yeah.
There's no formal board action that needs to
okay.
be had, so I think.
So let's do that.
Yeah.
Okay. So for all three, if I can get a motion and a second on all three.
We don't need a motion.
No, there's no motion.
Oh, because
consensus.
We're doing consensus.
Yep.
Right.
So why don't we have Jeff walk
Go
everybody
ahead, Jeff.
Through what
sure.
the topics are. And
you just
feedback.
Said that, and I missed it.
Sure. As Lisa pointed out, none of these are requiring any kind of ordinance changes or anything like that, but there were some implications about, you know, setting precedent in that. So we just wanted to make sure that there was board buy-in staff move forward implementing any of these. The first one before you here is a crosswalk on Hawthorne Avenue. Request originally came in for a crosswalk on Hawthorne at Thatcher. And as I think we started discussing that back in January, or actually maybe even September or November of last year, commission discussed the general safety parameters of that intersection. It's a bit of a busy intersection, especially during rush hour. So they had some concerns about putting a crosswalk there. We started to look at alternatives, one of which was kind of a mid-block crosswalk at the Metro Tunnel, the other being Gale Avenue. Pros and cons to all three of those. And ultimately the conversation went back to, well, let's have the traffic engineering consultant do a study of the intersection at Thatcher and Hawthorne, so that'll better inform as to whether or not A, changes need to be made at the intersection for traffic control, but B, whether or not it's a good place for a crosswalk. Went to the consultant about that. Due to COVID, numbers are down, traffic volumes were down, so that was essentially a waste of time and money at the time, so we didn't do that either. So we asked them for a general opinion on the three locations that we had identified. And that's essentially what the commission discussed at their last meeting. What they ultimately recommended was a striped crosswalk at Hawthorne and Gale Avenue, so essentially the west leg of that intersection. The idea being that most of the residents leaving the metro station are still heading east, so they would kind of go through that area, but also to kind of stay away from Thatcher and a mid-block crossing. The one caveat that they tacked on at the commission was to also put in a curb ramp at the northeast corner of Hawthorne and Thatcher to still allow pedestrians to cross north-south across Hawthorne on the east side of Thatcher. So those are the two items associated with this, or the two aspects associated with this item here, a crosswalk at Gale and a curb ramp at Hawthorne. Difference being no striped crosswalk at Thatcher and Hawthorne. But still a means for a pedestrian to cross Hawthorne over towards Thatcher. The one concern that staff has about that particular element is that that curb ramp across Hawthorne at Thatcher, the south side of that is the alley. There's an alley that comes out there. So we would essentially be kind of putting in an unofficial crosswalk, if you will, that kind of leads into an alley entrance. So that was a little bit concerning to staff. There were some cons pointed out in the Transportation Engineering's opinion memo about that, but that's ultimately what the Traffic and Safety Commission recommended. So that was the first item. The second item was brought up during public comments at the last meeting. There were some speeding concerns and traffic volume concerns on the 500 block of Thatcher Avenue, mm-hmm. Northbound and southbound. Ultimately, what they recommended was, hey, it would be great to have two pole-mounted radar feedback signs on the 500 block of Thatcher for both northbound and southbound traffic. But if we could only have one, they were asking or basically recommending a one pole-mounted radar feedback sign for traffic going in the southbound direction. So that was the recommendation they made on that particular item. And the last one is somewhat of a cleanup item. A couple years ago, the village undertook a safe walking routes to school project. A lot of recommendations came out of that, some of which were stop signs that flash red at busier intersections. And the commission, we did kind of a 12 to 15 month checkup, if you will, on the Safe Routes project and all the implementation of it. And some of the recommendations that came from that checkup were three additional intersections requested to have flashing stop signs. So it was Lathrop and Lemoyne, the north-south direction at that intersection, Division and Franklin, east-west along Division, and then all four stop signs at Chicago and Park Avenue. So the commission recommended approval of flashing stop signs at all three of those. So again, just looking for consensus on these items. Happy to answer any questions you have, but no ordinance changes, so no official motion or vote is really required.
I have a question, Jeff.
Sure.
I agree with these three proposals. And there was a resident who contacted me after the packet came out with a question about one of the other items that you were looking at under the Safe Walking, program. There are eight on this memo that you wrote in September 2020. Are they all going to be looked at eventually, or where do the rest of them stand?
Sure. So there were, I think, like you said, a total of eight that were requested, I should say. The Traffic and Safety Commission kind of looked at those, and we discussed. They recently adopted a parameter for how new items come onto the agenda for them. So there's a 75% requirement. If somebody says, I want a stop sign at this intersection, we kind of have some new parameters for how we move forward with that. With some of the requests that came to Traffic and Safety related to Safe Routes, the Safe Routes project, there were some items that didn't really seem to have anything to do with the Safe Routes themselves. They were more just, I think the perception was that they were related to Safe Routes because we had just put in a lot of stop signs at intersections and things like that. So Traffic and Safety Commission, while they weren't outright rejecting them, their opinion was that these items should still have to go through the new parameters that they had set up to get back on a future agenda. And nothing would stop those folks from doing so, but the Safe Routes to School have all been established. And so it's hard to say we need more stop signs or fewer stop signs because we've established the routes. That was the, that project in a box is done, for lack of a better term. Adding flashing stop signs, those are still on those routes to school. So it made sense to handle that as part of this kind of checkup on Safe Routes to School. Those other items were just looked at as a bit of a separate item that would just go through the normal process for getting on a traffic and safety agenda.
Okay, so that's what a resident should do. They should go through the normal process if it hasn't been addressed yet.
Correct.
Thank you.
Anything else?
No. Okay.
All right, thank you.
I think it looks like you've got consensus. Yeah. There's nobody that's against it or having major issues, so thank you.
Thank you.
So move ahead. Great. All right, moving on to boards and commissions, appointments and reappointments. So it is my pleasure to make these recommendations and appointments to the board and seek your advice and consent. And I will go through each of them. We did give you the resumes and all the other information that we could find and have on the appointee on Wednesday, so you had an extra day to go through the packet and ask any questions. So my appointments are the following. On the Economic Development Commission, I appoint Katie Lowes, who is will take over the Mass vacancy. On the Economic Development Commission, I would like to appoint Raj Shimblunka, who will take over Donna's vacancy. Economic Development Commission, I want to reappoint Kyla Brown. On the Economic Development Commission, I'd like to reappoint Tim Brangle. On the Sustainability Commission, I'd like to appoint Maggie Clancy for the Gillis vacancy. On the Sustainability Commission, I'd like to appoint Jeff Beezy for the Behan vacancy. On the Sustainability Commission, I'd like to reappoint Susan Charette. On the Historic Preservation Commission, I'd like to appoint John Schwartz. And on the Historic Preservation Commission, I'd like to reappoint Carly Graham White. On the Historic Preservation Commission, I'd like to appoint Scott Krasinski for the vacancy. On the following Traffic and Safety Commission, I'd like to reappoint Kim Hoyt. On the Traffic and Safety Commission, I'd like to reappoint John Asga. On the Traffic and Safety Commission, I'd like to reappoint Rick Gillis. And on the Traffic and Safety Commission, I'd like to appoint David Carroll for Johan's vacancy. And on the Traffic and Safety Commission, I'd like to appoint Patricia Chase for the Reed vacancy. On the Police Pension Board, I'd like to reappoint Heath Bray. And on the Police Pension Board, I'd like to reappoint Rosemary McAdam. On the Bourne Fire Police Commission, I'd like to reappoint John Phelan. Local Ethics Commission, I want to appoint Peggy Daly as member and chair to fill Collins' vacancy. Local Ethics Commission, I'd like to appoint Anastasia Sinet, will take over for the Cullerton vacancy. I'd like to, on the Local Ethics Commission, reappoint Greg Ignofo. On the Plan Commission, appoint Elias Yanaki. On the Zoning Board of Appeals, I'd like to reappoint Jerry Dombrowski. On the Zoning Board of Appeals, I'd like to appoint Karina Davis. On the Zoning Board of Appeals, I'd like to appoint Chris Plach. Plach for the Kilbride Bernie vacancy. On the Development Review Board, I'd like to appoint the, Karina Davis for the Kilbride vacancy. Development Review Board, I'd like to appoint Elias Yanaki for the Dombrowski vacancy. And on the Development Review Board, I'd like to reappoint Frank Martin as member and chair. I do I need to have a motion and a second for this reappointment and appointment. So
make,
if I can
make a motion to approve the Village President's recommendations for boards and commissions.
Second.
Okay. So be happy to talk about either any one of these appointments. I think they're all really anxious to serve. Again, they're volunteers. They want to get back to our community. So I appreciate presenting these names of some of our great village residents. Any questions or comments? If I'm not hearing any, you might want to remove Rick from this vote and vote separately. Yeah. Okay, so do you want to change?
I did. So I'll make a motion to approve the Village President's recommendations for boards and commissions, excluding Mr. Gillis on traffic and safety.
Okay. Yeah. You're okay with that?
It would be Trustee Johnson.
Johnson, second. So thank you, Ken.
Second.
Okay, very good. So hearing no comments or questions, I'd like to have the clerk to please take the vote.
So for the abstention for Trustee Gillis, it would just be on the one item?
Yeah. Yes. When we do that.
Okay.
We'll do that.
Do we do these individually?
No. I think, right? Do we have to go
individually? It's an omnibus vote on all of the appointments except for Mr. Gillis. It will be subject to a separate motion.
Yep.
Because President Ducey went through them, they do not have to be read into the record again. You can just call the vote at this time.
Okay. Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis for everyone except for number
three. No, we're going to do them separate.
Okay.
It excluded.
All right.
Don't worry.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much, Board. Now I'd like a motion to appoint Rick Gillis to the Traffic and Safety Commission.
Make a motion to appoint Rick Gillis to the Traffic and Safety Commission for a 4-year term expiring 4/30/25.
Second. Second.
Okay, hearing no objections or comments, Lisa will abstain from this vote. So if you could please take the vote.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. All right, so I'd like to move on to unfinished business. And as you all knew, today we got late notice that, unfortunately, Lake and Lathrop representatives were unable to show up. So we'll talk more about that during executive session. So we'll move on to nine new business. So consideration of recommendations regarding boards and commissions appointments. This is the report.
All right, so just a very brief review And I just want to touch on a couple points in the memo that I shared with the Village Board of Trustees. In February, the board directed staff to hold a public forum to accept input on potential improvements to the appointment process. That public forum was held in June. Several members of the community participated in that forum and provided feedback to the village. As you know, the village currently has 11 standing advisory bodies and two ad hoc committees. Of those advisory bodies, five of them are created by state statute, six of them are created by local legislation. For those that are statutorily created at the state level, the appointment authority, length of appointment terms for those bodies are defined by statute, and the process that they have is that the village president brings forward the appointments with the advice and consent of the village board of trustees. Of the remaining six standing boards and commissions, again, there is enabling legislation that defines how those appointments are brought forward, and they grant the authority to the village president to bring the appointments forward with the advice and consent of the village board of trustees. It's the village board of trustees that has final approval authority over all appointments of the village president. The core of the existing appointment process is relatively simple. An application is submitted. A vacancy occurs on a board or commission or advisory group, either through resignation, change in residency, some members elect not to continue to serve. And then when those vacancies exist, the deputy village clerk, Sarah Pfeiffer, sends the applications that have been received to date for from candidates who express interest in serving on that advisory body to the village president, who then interviews the applicant and makes a determination to bring that appointment forward to the village board of trustees. The village board considers the appointment just as you did, and if approved, then that appointed official joins the advisory body, and we begin the process of trying to educate them on everything from Open Meetings Act to statements of economic interest, potential conflicts of interest, the Freedom of Information Act and what documents are considered in the public domain, as well as just their role on the group, Robert's Rules of Order, right parliamentary procedure, the goals and objectives of each advisory body is defined in the enabling legislation and the role that they play. So when we look at the process that exists today, I think there are opportunities for a couple of enhancements to the existing process, and I think they're really driven by what we do to share information with the community and what we do once members of that advisory body have been appointed. The process that is used for appointment, again, is consistent with state legislation and local legislation. It's existed in the village for decades, and it's something that is approved by the village board of trustees. So I'm not suggesting that we make changes to that core process. When we look at that process, it's pretty standard across Illinois municipalities. There are some communities who elect to have different groups who may review those appointments. I would say that's probably more typical in very large communities where you have a very large number of appointees. I don't know that we have that here. I think it's a reasonable process. I think it's standard and customary, and it functions very well. So what I'm suggesting that we do is utilize the village's existing communication channel to improve what we communicate with the community and how we communicate it, primarily as it relates to the roles and responsibilities of these advisory bodies, how the appointment process works, how residents can engage with these bodies, what it means to them that these bodies exist, and how they serve the residents of this community, the duties of each group, the number of members, and the appointment terms as established by the enabling legislation. So I think we can use our website, newsletter, social media to share that a little bit more frequently and just do a more thorough job of getting that information out to the community. I think we can also extend our reach to our community partners to help them share the information. I think one of the things that we probably need to do more of is talking about the amazing work of these bodies. They do a tremendous amount of work. They're all volunteers, they're residents who do a lot to serve the community and give their time, and they're all completely volunteers. So I think it's important to highlight the good work that they do. One of the other things we can do is collect information regarding potential applicant subject matter familiarity. However, I don't think subject matter expertise is needed. I think it's important to hear a broad range of opinions on any advisory body, and it's reasonable to appoint people, like for traffic and safety, I don't think you have to be a traffic engineer to be on the commission. I think you have to just understand how these things work. And be able to bring your perspective to the commission, and I think we need to value all of those perspectives. With the post-appointment process, I think there are additional resources that can be made available to further acclimate newly appointed officials to their roles. I think similar to what the trustees, especially the new trustees, are kind of going through now, there's a lot of different processes and procedures that we deal with. And just getting people familiar sometimes too with where to find information, how to use their staff liaison to help them understand the different issues, what they can expect in terms of what's coming before them for a meeting packet, and certainly encouraging them to ask as many questions as is necessary to get them the information they need so they can make effective decisions. So the roles and responsibilities of each advisory body, and again, some of those different laws that I think interplay with our appointed officials, including one I neglected to mention earlier, being the Gift Ban Act. So there was a really good document from Glenn Ellen that serves as essentially a manual for those bodies, which I think we can adapt for our purposes here in River Forest. And I think we can also, again, just do a better job with our staff liaisons of making sure we're reaching out proactively to help people feel welcome and comfortable with what is happening and what they should expect when they get to those meetings. And I know with the advisory bodies that I work with, the chairman, chair people of those groups do a pretty good job of reaching out to new members to welcome them and help try to get them up to speed relatively quickly, because it's a little bit like drinking from a fire hose when you are thrown into a meeting and need to familiarize yourself with process and information very, very quickly. So those are the staff recommendations, and staff is requesting that the Village Board direct the implementation of the communication and post-appointment enhancements, excuse me, that are outlined in the memo.
Yeah, great. Yeah, great recommendations and great summarization. So any, yeah, Bob.
So I listened to the meeting. I thought you guys did a great job. I appreciate the residents and their input. The one thing that I did come away with was, in addition to your post communication, and I think you were kind of getting there a little bit, is basically a job description. You know, so what is the position? What is the expectation? If I'm looking at the Village website saying I want to be on the Economic Development Commission, again, not that we're saying that it's only people who are involved in business or whatever, but, you know, what is it that kind of spurs your interest to be part of that group? You know, the one thing that I was not in favor of is a substantial vetting process. I think it gets a little bit too, you know, people, you know, they express their interests, you know, like many of us who have been involved in committees before, we're on trustees, you know, we spoke with the village president, she's asked our interests, she's done a little bit of homework on us, she understands it. So, you know, as we go from being, you know, vetted, if you will, to getting your name on the list, I think there's plenty of opportunities for people to understand who you are and what value you'll add to a committee. So, but a job description, I think, would be helpful for people to understand what it is each commission does. And then I fully support the post, if you will. I did think the Glenn Ellen document was good. I'd like someone on our team to rip that apart and make it our own a little bit. So. That'd be great.
Okay.
I just wanted to say that, you know, for me, it's very important that we continue to work along developing our transparency. And I think it's very important that we develop the transparency of process, meaning, and I was very encouraged to hear you say, you know, we're going to develop how we do things and send that out to the community via social media and everything. And so, I was glad to hear that, and I think that while proceeding down that path, make sure that we're always thinking about the residents, taking the time to educate the residents on the process, and I think that alleviates a lot of issues as long as everyone knows when things are happening, how things are happening, and at what point can they respond or engage. And I think that it looks like you're moving towards that path, which is a great thing.
To piggyback on that comment, I think that the process part is something that I heard people asking for in the public comments meeting. To your point, Trustee Johnson, the idea that if we can help the community understand mm-hmm. what happens, you know, so that if there's a vacancy 4/30/21, What are we doing, you know, a few months out to prepare for that, right? What is the role of the president? What's the role of the chairman or the other commissioners? I'd love to see something like a timeline help and maybe established. From what I could tell, it seems like we probably could be like start for vacancies, start a time clock, right, about 6 or 7 months out, where the commissioner or the committee chair is checking in with those people who are going to vacate potentially, right, a position, a seat, and ask them, are you interested in reapplying or do you want to vacate it? And then having that be pushed out to the community, right? So if a seat's coming up, let the community know 6 months out that seat's available and people can apply for it. You know, I think having something standard, to your point, where they're like, you know, as part of our, you know, newsletter, Sustainability Commission, you know, there's going to be a seat potentially open, you know, apply for it.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. There's a little, you know, problem because sometimes you don't know until the very last moment.
Yeah.
Simply
yeah.
because somebody's life's changed or, you know, they just don't want to do it anymore.
Right.
So I agree with you. As soon as we know something, we ought to, you know, begin the process of letting the residents know this is a opening, possible opening. It just doesn't, I mean, I wish I knew everybody that was going to come off something. I mean, we know it because the dates are there, but not necessarily are they not going to get reappointed either, you know, kind of thing.
Also, I would say even just having residents aware of the area to look.
Yeah.
So you can't obviously predict when it can happen, but you can always know if I look here, I'm going to find out what's active right now.
Totally. Agreed with that. Or what's the term, right?
Can I ask on that point specifically? And I think I know the answer to this, but if someone wanted to apply for one of the commissions, even though the vacancy is out 3-4 years, they can apply now, right? And then they're on a waiting list. So what I'm suggesting, and I'm not disagreeing with putting some plan together like that, a timeline, but I also want people to understand they don't have to wait till then to apply for these positions. They can, and they can apply for more than one if they want to. So,
in fact, I know that was part of the criticism. Yeah. It's like, well, I applied in 2015. I'm now being put on. And I often say, well, the terms are 4 years. And so unless somebody, you know, resigns a term or doesn't want to be reappointed, it probably take 4 years. You know, to get into the rotation. So it's not by, you know, it's not because we're overlooking the folks. It's just simply because the rotation. And, you know, we have a handful. We're a small community. So we try to get people, you know, rotated in.
I also think that pushing it out that, you know, this commission has a seat that's going to be coming open in 6 months is an opportunity to do the sort of advertisement for that commission's work. The good work that they've been doing and point them to, I know the Sustainability Commission has its own page on the Village website. I think the others do as well. You know, push them to that site, that site as well to get more information. And something that I would love to see for residents who want to volunteer to be on commissions is to, as part of the application process, to ask if they would attend one of the meetings in person. So that also gives them a more information about what that commission does by attending a meeting.
Yeah, I think, you know, we talked about it. I think, you know, making it optional and say, you know, this is something you probably would want to do because, you know, you want to get interested in it. But many times residents don't know. They just want to give back. And so if you say, well, go up to all seven of them. So they just, you know, they don't know. So, I mean, typically I think the idea of going to the website and going to the job description and going to what's out there, I think, is a great start. And then I would then, to your point, Katie, I think then if I see somebody on really like sustainability, then I'd say go to the meeting and see how you like it further. But a lot of times we'll get somebody that says, I'd like to get back. just tell me where you think I'd fit.
Yeah.
And if it makes you feel any better, I know one of the people that we appointed to the economic development has attended a couple of meetings, so they did take the initiative to do that. So I have noticed on our couple of calls I've been on the last couple of months.
Corina, the zoning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they typically, if they know exactly, like, you know, Maggie Clancy, I mean, pick one. I mean, they know where they want to go. They'll go. It's those folks that typically say, I really don't know. And then we'll typically say, well, go to the website and look at what they do and then let me know mm-hmm. if what interests you. And then typically I'll say, go to the meeting. So they do. I mean, it's, I'd say 90% of the time. But anyway.
Could that be baked into, interrupted someone. Could that be baked into the application to ask them invite you to, we encourage you to.
Yep, of course.
And ask them if they have been to a meeting for the.
Yeah, but I just want to say, if they say no, I mean, that doesn't mean that they're not qualified or unable or not interested. I mean, again, our lives are so busy. I just don't want to make something unintended consequences or
no.
I mean, I'm going to say 90% of the people do it anyway. So, I mean, by saying encouraging, I think is a good thing. Because if they really want to be on it, they'll go. And I'll ask them.
And the other thing I think that Erica said that I liked was the involvement of the commission chair. Coordinating, you know, telling the village president, you know, this person, you know, seats up. This other person has been attending, you know, meetings and looks like a good, you know, candidate. You know, this is what we're working on. This is what we need. Because that's sort of the boots on the ground, the person who's, you know, dug into the work of that commission and knows what that commission's working on and what they need. So I would love, in the interest of transparency, I would love to see something like built into, if there's a timeline, putting something about the commission chair or advisory body chair, having some input with the village president, communication.
It's fine. We do it all the time. It's done. That's what we do. Mm-hmm. So I have no trouble documenting that.
I think it helps. You know, we heard, I attended the public meeting on this issue, and, you know, we've been receiving messages from residents since February or earlier. And I think what we've heard is, you know, we don't know the system.
Right.
It might be what the system is already.
No, I agree.
But they don't know it, so let's document it.
No,
let's put it out there.
Well, that's why I thought originally when we all talked about it back in February, I mean, the improvement and the documentation of it is so important because there is so much work that I personally do that should get documented that doesn't. And I think it gets lost amongst many of the residents if they just knew just the amount of interviewing and talking and speaking to people and you know, because I'm as interested as all of you to make sure that we get the right person. So documenting it is great. I'm all in.
Yeah. I would just add that some of the commissions, you can give back without actually being a commissioner. And I think the documentation from Glen Ellen does kind of outline, you know, we have voting commissioners, we have student commissioners in some cases.
Yep.
We have resident volunteers in some cases. So there isn't any one flavor for giving back.
Yep.
And sometimes people just need, that's a good thing for people to understand. And I also, just to reiterate, you know, I do think making the Glen Ellen document our own is great because it has all the commissions there and it has all the information in one place.
I love the document.
And it is something that then, you know, folks can read and understand and also then understand the expectations of being a commissioner. I think some folks are surprise sometimes at, you know, kind of what they're going to be expected to do. And I think that's an important thing for folks to understand when they go into it.
Great.
Right. And I would like to add, too, regarding the post-appointed process, and I want to actually clarify, and I'm assuming it is, maybe it's in the roles or responsibilities, but one of the things you want to emphasize, too, is the evidentiary hearing and their role in that.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, we've had a couple of situations where some of the hearing commissioners went out and did their own investigation, so to speak, and they were going outside of the evidentiary hearing. And I think they need to know that's really shouldn't be allowed. They're acting sort of like a judge, and they should be hearing whatever evidence comes at that hearing before they make a determination instead of going off on their own. So that's one thing. The other thing I think that I want to add is a strong emphasis on quorum and their participation. Because sometimes I think, you know, and I'm not saying that this is a big issue with a number of our commissioners, but every now and then we'll hear about how some of the commissioners didn't attend one of their hearings or meetings and they didn't have a quorum or sufficient. And then we're dealing with that scenario here at our level if it gets to our level. So I think they just need to know that, you know, they have to participate in those meetings. And, well, you know this too, Lisa, so that they have to participate in these meetings. And it's not like sort of right.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it
I mean,
really
I,
has to be an emergency scenario that they can't attend, so to speak.
Understood.
Right.
The one part in the memo that I think I'd be interested in changing, you have a graphic here that shows the process of an application. And part of it shows that the applicant is reviewed and the application is submitted to the VBOT. And that's not exactly how it works, right? Because right now, an application for somebody who's nominated is submitted to us. We don't see a full set of applicants. And so I think in helping me help President Aducci come up with appointments, I would like to see the set of applicants in the pool who are interested in a position along with the recommendation from the village president.
Yeah. I think that's, I mean, I'll let.
No, no, I was going to say the problem with that then is you're interjecting then the role as the village president.
Right.
And this is going on, this is similar to what the federal government does when the president nominates someone. The Senate gets to ask all the questions they want, but they don't interview everyone, every applicant that that applied to the president for the nomination. So,
yeah, I'm not talking about interviewing everyone, but.
Or reviewing the application,
but,
nonetheless.
But I think,
is what
I just
but,
think if you start doing that, then you again. It brings up another, well, why not this person versus that person? And that's the whole process that Lisa just talked about. The reasonable and customary, every municipality, for the most part, you know, does exactly what we do. Otherwise, you'll have, like, a bureaucracy of Oak Park where they put a citizens committee that does all the interviewing, and it is just another level of bureaucracy. And I don't think we need that. I mean, at the end of the day, I think it works. I think it's not broken. And I think it, you know, it's going to go beyond all of us, well beyond me, well beyond you in the years. So,
yeah, I guess I don't see it as bureaucracy. I see it as when you appoint someone, you're allowed to say, you know, why this person is a good fit for him. Versus the other people in the pool.
But I think that's exactly what we're trying to avoid.
Right.
And
well,
I mean, it is a good fit.
The way it's set up is, you know, is there's a group of applicants, and she gets the village president has the ability to review those and, you know, and then make the recommendation. So, I mean, you know, we could spend weeks and weeks and weeks having these discussions about who's who works and who doesn't work.
Yeah.
And that's not the intent.
I'm not taking away from the power of the village president to make a recommendation.
It's not even the power of me. It's
no,
the power
but,
of you all.
But,
yeah.
What happens if the five of us don't agree on, you know, who we're going to bring forward, and then, you know, we give it to the village president, then she's got to turn around and bring it back, and then it seems like, you know, the system is people. If the village president weren't interviewing people and talking to people and getting the best recommendation, I would agree with you that we should have a different system. But, you know, she does that. So she takes that upon herself. And then, again, we rely on her and her expertise in the areas of the village government to make those.
And I'll add, and Katie mentioned it, I do go to the chair. I mean, when Katie was the chair of sustainability, I mean, I literally, we talked about the people that would be on the you know, I do that for almost all of these commissions. I will talk to the chair in detail. So, it, to me, that's the level of interviewing and discussion that I think needs to happen. As you said, Katie, I agree with that. That's what happens today, and we need to document that. And then from there, I bring the best candidates. And then you, as the village board, advises and consents. And so, I mean, it's not where the power is. It's really where the vote is. And so I think it, you know, that interviewing and vetting process already happened.
I mean, just think about this. If we took DEI and we broke down that, when would we ever get to a place where you guys would start working on that? If we interviewed and vetted everyone, you know, that came forward, and eliminate people and so on and so forth.
Well, we try to do that, and that's, you know, and it didn't work.
I mean, that is part of the process is to, I mean, it says right here that we interview the applicants.
VBOT doesn't interview the applicants.
If we're starting a new process, though, it might be something that, you know, may be relevant.
That's what we're talking about. That's the issue right here. I understand that it's the, you know, a lot of municipalities do it this way, and the state legislation is at its base. But this is on our desks to look at and to see if we can improve. And what we've heard a lot from residents at that meeting. And prior meetings and in emails to our board is that they want more transparency. And what I struggle with is when I hear residents say, you know, advice and consent, but, you know, how are you making this decision in a vacuum?
That's not absolutely untrue. I mean, you can pick any person and do research on that person. And if you feel that person is not capable or competent, you could say no. And you ought to say no. And if you're not saying no, then you're not doing the duties of your job. So I completely disagree. I mean, otherwise we'd have complete mayhem if we interviewed everybody. And there's lists that want to be on the Traffic and Safety Commission. I mean, and in fact, you know, they say I want to be on everyone. So
one thing that would be helpful would be if we actually do have this timeline, it would be very helpful to have nominees put forth to the village board like a month and a half before the term expires, so that we're not dealing with what we dealt with tonight, which was 28 nominees for spots that have many of the spots have already been vacant for several months for 10 different commissions. That was a heavy or for the board to look at 28 nominees. And there was pressure also because, just 30 seconds to finish.
Yes.
There was pressure to vote because if we didn't vote these people in, how are these commissions and advisory bodies going to do their work? How are they going to have their quorum? And we were voting in three chairs. So they wouldn't have had leaders. They wouldn't have been able to, you know, make agendas and, you know, schedule meetings. So I personally felt pressure. I would like to get this to our board a month and a half out so that, as you said, we can, you know, look at it with calm and have the ability to maybe talk to a nominee and do the research. We heard some concern from residents tonight about a couple of your nominees that I heard tonight.
Okay. Of course, and, you know, I could have brought up on the opposite side. It happened. You know, that there's people that we've appointed that supported the other candidate. You can't go down that route. It would be horrible. We're a very small community. We all enjoy each other's company. We're neighbors. We're friends. I refuse to make this political. I refuse. I think it's wrong, and I think it's dangerous. What we need to do is look at each individual candidate and resident as a person that wants to give back to our community. I don't see where any one of these people couldn't do what we've asked them to do. So I really urge you not to make this political.
Okay. I don't know where that's coming from.
Well, you just said
there's people that we've nominated here. Yeah. People have brought up issues.
Yeah.
We heard
what the issue was.
Okay. So as an example, let's get some sooner so that they don't all get
I wish I could.
Oh,
I mean,
well, can I add something? I think part of the stacking up, too, was the fact that two things. Number one, when this issue was raised, I think we postponed nominating or even voting on individuals because we were going to look through this process, number one, from what I recollect. Number two, also, with the election coming around, it might have been a new person that was there, and I think it's respectful to, as opposed to what some other governments, though, they fill in the positions.
Right.
I think that whoever the new president was or the current president,
and
be the one to make those appointments.
Right.
It would be second that I thought value to. But I do want to also say that, listen, when I'm going to read from one of the proponents for looking at the process, and he said, and this is John Grant, although I've said this before, I want to stress that my comments about the village board's handling of advisory bodies are about flaws with the system, not with the people. So I'm only emphasizing that because I'd like to, if we're going to change something, it's because the output or the result is coming out bad. And I'm not saying that we couldn't look at the process. But at the end of the day, if the people are still accepted by even the people proposing the process, then that to me is also important. So, and I heard a couple of the comments about two of the individuals that were there. Now, if, without going into major debate, because God knows you're talking to a lawyer now, right? What, one of the things that when they said about a proponent and what they state their affiliation with a newspaper, I mean, you're talking about a First Amendment right. I don't even know. Are we going to do that? What about the people who went the other way to the Wednesday Journal? Are we going to bar them from internet? I mean, you're going to have that debate based on freedom of speech. The other thing we're going to have is, I understand the comment about someone contributing over to one of the candidates or president. We're all going to be in that same position. Because we all, maybe we didn't get $1,000. Maybe we got something less. We're all, people are voting for us. I mean, where do you draw the line on a conflict? I'm assuming based on the statement of economic interest, that legally would be the conflict that would ultimately disqualify or find someone to be invalid. But it's a disclosure. So I don't even know if we, I personally wouldn't want to get into that debate.
I don't either. I want to go back to something you said just a second ago, which is we're talking about the process. We're not talking about the specific facts of each, you know, of these candidates. I would like to see them earlier than you know, the position has already expired or is expiring if we don't vote tonight.
I see. I agree with you there.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was an example.
Okay.
Again, I think Rez told you. We try to get it before it expires. And often we do, Katie.
Right.
Maybe you forget, but we do.
Unless someone resigns.
Resigns. And then automatically, the very next time I try to bring it, I try to bring a candidate to the table.
I've had one person resign from my age-friendly committee after they were appointed after 1 or 2 months. Something happens and we just have to fill it. So
we will try. I guess the way to maybe.
To the extent we can, I would agree with you.
Yeah. I mean, the best way to kind of draw this to a conclusion is that we will do our best to get it as quickly as we can based on when the person.
And I think, you know, some of the recommendations and things we talked about earlier, I think, you know, will help the process. So, you know.
Okay. All right. Good input. All right. Thank you very much. Yeah. No, we got to go.
Do we need a motion?
Consensus.
No.
So we'll go ahead and if I can get a motion to for the next item 9B.
I move to approve a contract with Precarious Multimedia for a 3-month engagement in the amount of $17,600.
Second.
Okay. Lisa.
I have
Sarah.
Hello. Good evening, everyone. So I'm going to briefly summarize the memo and then. We have Melanie here from Vicarious. We'll have her introduce herself, and then we can take any questions that you may have. So early last year, the village increased the quantity of its communications to keep pace with the changing circumstances of the COVID-19 pandemic. In order to meet demand and give current staffing and given current staffing levels in the administration department, staff issued a request for proposals for communication services late last year. And staff has been working with Vicarious Multimedia since March of 2021. The cost of services from March through June has been within the Acting Village Administrator Spending Authority, using funds that were budgeted for salary and benefits in the administration department. Before you this evening is an extension of the contract with Vicarious for an additional 3 months from July to the end of September. In addition to the existing communication support for the department, this contract includes the implementation of an improved monthly e-newsletter with a similar layout to the digital newsletters included in your packet materials from Long Grove and Buffalo Grove, and which are both Vicarious clients, as well as the launch of a Nextdoor social media channel for the village, which is another way for the village to reach residents with important updates and information. Staff has been very pleased with Vicarious's work and their communications expertise. Staff's recommendation is to extend the contract with Vicarious for a 3-month engagement. And then just as a note, if the contract is not, the retainer for the contract is not extended beyond September, there would still be a $1,500 per month recurring fee for the graphic design and layout services for the updated newsletter, since these services cannot be performed in-house by staff.
Good evening, Village President Ducey, Board of Trustees, and Acting Administrator Shiner. I'm Melanie Sandoz-Stefano, getting over a respiratory infection, so I might sound a little gruff tonight. So I founded Vicarious Multimedia 17 years ago. I come from a news reporting background, so that's where I did my training ground. We have a team of 8 people. We're writers, editors, photographers, videographers, social media managers, and crisis communicators when needed. And that does come up from time to time, especially with our municipal clients. We work right now with 5 municipalities on retainer, including River Forest, Buffalo Grove, Long Grove, Glencoe, and Hoffman Estates. And we also work with businesses, nonprofits, and professional associations. Our work with River Forest has been really rewarding. I think we've done a lot of good while we're here. You may have noticed, for those of you that read it, the e-newsletter, if you're not signed up, sign up. we're working really hard to get more people onto that. Expanding social media and moving into Nextdoor will help to do that. We continue to market the e-newsletter. I think we've grown over 100 people so far. We'll continue to do that. And as Sarah mentioned, one of our proposals was to kind of separate out the monthly newsletter. It has news from your taxing bodies, Park District, Sustainability Commission, library, schools, townships. And so we proposed to design a new one that would stand out a little bit, more like an actual newsletter, as opposed to the e-newsletter, because there's more content, Constant Contact, which is the platform we do the e-newsletter communications in, does clip it towards the end in certain email providers. So we want to make sure that all the writing that we're doing is actually read by our residents. So that was the genesis of that proposal. Also, going into Nextdoor, it's really an excellent tool. We manage that for other municipalities. I like to say it's the next best thing with communications, because it's all of your residents. People who aren't residents aren't on that page, so you're speaking directly to your crowd, the people that you want to reach. So that was another recommendation, just in going over the current communications with the village and how we could help to enhance what was already being done. And you have a great staff. We've enjoyed working with them. And we meet every week, and we make sure that we're covering the topics necessary. I've heard a few things tonight that I'm sure we'll be wrapping into the communication soon, which is great. So that's a little bit about us and what we do. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Yeah, sure, Ken.
I have just 2 quick questions. One, in your prior experience with other municipalities, have you had any experience? I see you have strong social media presence. Mm-hmm. Have you ever faced residents that don't use necessarily social media or off the grid, for lack of a better word, and how have you addressed those, educating? Because in my opinion, the most important thing in life, maybe not in life, is to educate the community. So, you allow us to do that, mm-hmm. right? So how do we get to those residents that may not be able to receive that education via social media? Mm-hmm. I just want to know if you've ever run into that issue.
Yeah. So in other towns will deliver their newsletter, their print newsletter, to every single resident and business, and some even all the businesses. Others, especially Long Grove, we went to a digital model for a good time during the pandemic, but we wanted to reach the elderly population especially. because especially there was health and safety, welfare issues that needed to get to them. And we presumed many weren't on social. So we had those delivered to the Park District that had senior programming, the townships. In that town, there are two townships that service, that handle seniors and the senior centers in the area, in addition to the assisted living, senior living, residents. So we had made sure that at least the physical newsletter was delivered to those places if they weren't delivering to all residents. So that is a helpful way to do it, especially in those places too. A lot of times, you know, we think that most seniors aren't on social, but actually a lot are, many because they want to see their grandchildren who are maybe across the country. So yes, you're right. It is a challenge, but another thing that can be done too is at those locations where seniors do have services provided to them is to market that to them and say, it's simply go to vrf.us and click right here and you can get onto that e-newsletter. That's one of our big goals, has been to get people on the e-newsletter because it's a good weekly, you know, communication stream for residents.
Okay. Melanie, if you recall, and I can't remember the issue, but we did talk about like getting information to the assisted living facility.
Mm-hmm. We did.
For some reason, I can't remember what the issue was, but it was a big one. And we said, oh, let's make sure we get it printed and sent to, the executive director there and make sure they print it. And, they couldn't have been nicer. And mm-hmm. and we did the same thing with the township.
Okay. Yeah.
Where they'll have, stacks of our newsletters there.
Yeah, and the way that we had proposed to deliver the, it seems like a print newsletter. You saw it in your packet if you saw that. So it'll look like that, but there's a way to have it display on the website, but also it can be downloaded too.
Okay.
So as President Ducey said, if for those locations, they could actually download it right off of the website.
Okay.
They didn't have printed copies.
Yeah. I have one more question.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, sure can.
So one of the things I noticed is that we have, obviously several committees and commissions, but we sometimes do things, the same thing differently. And we had a general discussion, some of us discussed about the possibility when we're trying to reach out to the community and we try to, we want to know the opinion of the community on certain things. You know, we do a survey. The problem is it seems like we all do different surveys. We don't have unified process, which therefore could lead to confusion to the residents, and I'm wondering, is this something that you could assist us in working on unifying our process of increasing our community engagement via surveys? Is that, am I off base on that or overstepping? So.
No, you bring up a really good question, and I think, mm-hmm. Melanie, one of the things that we talked about, you probably shed more light on this than I can, but with Nextdoor, there's polling capabilities. Mm-hmm. I hear your comment about kind of unifying it, and I think that's a really good point. We can certainly work on that. But there are different social media tools that give us the ability to poll residents. If you want to shed some light on how you've used that previously.
Sure, yeah. So Nextdoor itself, and I don't know how many of you are on Nextdoor. Sometimes there's a wolf walking in the street or who's your painter. But from the village's standpoint, it's a separate kind of automatic pop-up municipal page, for lack of a better way to put it. So that will actually land in the feeds of the news feeds, like if you're on Facebook, the news that comes in to everyone that signed up to Nextdoor. It's a good quantity. It averages to be about 30% of residents. And if you market it, it can grow. At Buffalo Grove, we've been managing longest for 4 years, and 40% of residents are on Nextdoor, which is a huge percentage of residents to be in the same place you want them to be. So Lisa is correct. Nextdoor has a polling mechanism within it. There are ways to take that poll, replicate it, and actually push it out through the other social media so you can have that consistency I believe you're talking about, making sure there's not a bunch of different things going on. We have an absolute, these are the questions, we want these answers, keep it simple, get what we want in order to make decisions for the village board.
Is that what you're saying, Ken? Polling, or when you do, for instance, you're doing a survey for age-friendly. You're going to be doing a survey, I assume, DEI. Are you saying trying to get the same structure?
Correct.
Look and feel.
So
sure.
Sustainability is using SurveyMonkey or whatever, I think that that leads to the confusion of residents. I don't know how to do this because I thought it was done through survey and then it's a different way. So
understood.
If we unify the process, everybody knows where to go and everybody knows where to seek it, I think that would help. So.
Yeah, absolutely right.
We can work on that.
I think
that's a
whole,
great suggestion.
Whole reason we wanted to go to, kind of a, social media. Yeah, I totally agree. We shouldn't be reinventing whatever we're going to be using.
And for surveys, a lot of I happen to have a background in marketing and surveying. And I think a lot of institutions use Qualtrics when they want to be very specific or solely a survey tool that is a little bit more enhanced than something like SurveyMonkey or Google Form.
Yeah, and municipalities, there are certain survey organizations that really do just serve municipals. One's called Polco that I'm aware of, but yeah, there's plenty of options out there. But consistency is definitely something that's smart.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, there was something in the packet about using Nextdoor to communicate to different neighborhoods within the village.
Yeah.
Separately, can you talk about that? Because
I know it's hard. Like Nextdoor is such a great tool, but complicated in ways. So the user experience, like you as a resident, right? You have a neighborhood, and Nextdoor has decided what that neighborhood is called, right? There's a geography to it. So when you're on your Nextdoor page, you see the news in that neighborhood. So that's the user, the resident experience, right? So you can put out messages that reach all neighborhoods. You have to select that. But in general, when messages are coming in and out, you're seeing the news from your neighborhood. The municipal experience, on the other hand, like if a company like mine or village staff members are managing that, it's ignorant of neighborhoods in the way that when messages are put out, they go to everybody. They go to every neighborhood, every single resident that is on Nextdoor. So there are neighborhoods that are divided up for the resident experience, but that doesn't affect the villages page.
Okay.
But we can to take that step back a second, we can take that and message to specific neighborhoods when we would like to. So an example would be, you know, Northeast River Forest. So let's say there's a boil order there. Why do we have to bother everybody else? There's not a boiler anywhere else but there. So we could actually select that neighborhood if there were a Northeast River Forest and craft a message and send it directly to them. So that functionality is unique. You can't do that in any other social media page. So you can actually target neighborhoods. So you could target, you know, River Forest East and the three neighborhoods around, because that's where the boil order is occurring. So that's a unique, that there's a lot of unique aspects of the Nextdoor. So that's one of them, mm-hmm. the neighborhood feature of it.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So is this statement of work for just the 3 months then?
So there is an engagement for an additional 3 months on more of a, holistic program. Because with the administration team being down a member, just getting some assistance and crafting messages, getting information pushed out, you know, this is one of the services that we provide to the community that can be outsourced. So right now, during this interim period, that's what we're suggesting we continue to do. I've reached my maximum spending authority on what I can outsource, and now I need the board's approval to do that as well.
Right.
If we choose not to engage with Vicarious after that three-month period, then what we're saying is there would be an additional fee for them to help us set up the monthly newsletter, because it's going to be a little bit more content heavy. There's graphic design work that would need to be done. So the price that's included, Sarah, correct me if I'm wrong, includes the three-month engagement. Does it include the $1,500 after that? Or is that, I think you would be authorizing us to execute a contract that would allow us to spend that money after the three-month period.
Right.
There you go.
Yeah, I highly recommend this. I mean, prior to Vicarious coming in, I mean, this is the work John and I did by ourselves every day, you know, and it was very arduous and very taxing for me and for John, and it just is some work that needs to be in a professional hands.
Yeah, no, and so the reason why I'm asking is if it's 3 months, I totally like understand that, especially as we are a key person down in the village. I would be interested. Because it is a significant amount a month, and potentially having this bid too, to see other opportunities.
So when we originally enlisted the help of Vicarious, we did go out for RFP for consultants.
Yeah.
And so we went through the process of interviewing all of them and selecting Vicarious. I completely understand where you're coming from. I would say that the number of communications consultants who specialize in municipal work in the issues that are very specific to municipalities is a very small number of consultants. When we put the RFP out, and there was really one or two firms at that time even who were specializing in this type of work as a public agency with transparency issues, with different financial requirements, legal requirements. There's a lot of technical components to how we communicate and what we communicate. And so bidding this out and going out for RFP, we found that there was a very limited number of people who specialize in those areas and provide the types of services that we're looking for. So there's plenty of graphic designers, there's plenty of copywriters, there's plenty of PR, but getting it wrapped into that whole package is pretty difficult to find that type of consultant. And that's why I think Vicarious has been such a good partner of ours. So I would say that, you know, any contract the village can terminate. We certainly have provisions for that. We can rebid, write agreements, or for certain periods of time, and we can go back out and look in the marketplace from time to time. I also think that, you know, we are continually reviewing our communications program and constantly looking for ways to update it and make it better. And so we can, you know, continue to look at that going forward.
Yeah, and I got to remind the board, I mean, everything we do, we always say, let's make our communication more. I mean, every item we talk about, whether it's boards, commissions, let's do more of this, more transparency, more of this, more of that. And we agree, but the problem is there's people have to do more. So that's why Vicarious is so important to our team right now, is because it's not only taking care of a void, it is actually helping do what you all are asking the team to do, and that is more communication. So
I would say personally, like just on sustainability, the amount of outreach we were doing over the 2 years I was there, it's doubled, tripled.
Right. Enormous.
So it is something that is expected by the by our residents. It's also something that takes time. And, you know, if it was RFP'd at one point and we found Vicarious, I personally I don't think it's that expensive in the whole scheme of life based on, but I work at Ogilvy, which is really expensive.
Yes, it is.
So thanks.
We won't hire them.
Yeah, I wouldn't hire them either. They don't have the municipal expertise you're looking for.
All right.
Well,
the other, go ahead.
I would just suggest that maybe if the administration can come back to us in August to see, because I know the 1500 is on a monthly basis beyond September, but maybe in August you can let us know if is it worth renewing or do we do it one month. That's
sure.
I think the only feedback I'd have on that is that the 1500 is for the new formatted e-news as we continue to do it outside of this rest of the engagement with Vicarious. On the timeline that we've proposed, that first edition is going to go out late August, early September. That'd be the first time that the community gets a chance to see that new layout.
Okay.
And so we can certainly touch base in August. It might be a little premature because we're going to spend the rest of spend July getting that formatted, and then August getting our first edition written and laid out and ready for press. Even though it's, you know, the digital only, it's going to take 2-3 week lead time to get that all put together.
Yeah.
By September, we'll have, you know, more of an idea that, you know, the community's seen that first edition and where we're going to take that, you know, from there.
And I'm fine. I'm just saying it doesn't continue to roll and roll and roll.
Sure.
And then
as a point of clarification, the contract contemplates that specific period of time.
Yeah.
Okay.
The board is not authorizing expenditures beyond that period
of
time. So if the contract were to be extended,
it
would have to come back to the village board.
That's what I was just going to say.
Okay.
It will come back.
Okay.
And so just so I can understand this new e-newsletter, if we do this new e-newsletter, then in the future, even if we don't continue with a retainer, are we able to manage the layout and graphics of this new e-newsletter ourselves, or are we going to be paying the $1,500 a month for that in perpetuity for as long as we want to publish this new e-newsletter?
You can bring it in-house.
Well, at this point, we
not
don't
now,
have the ability to bring it in-house.
I know.
I couldn't say that again.
At this point, we don't have the capability to bring it in-house, right? There's specific graphic design that goes into it, and that's just not something we either have the capacity to do or the capability to do.
Yeah.
As there are vacancies in future positions, we can certainly take a look at bringing those skill sets in-house potentially. or finding other creative ways to do it. However, at this point,
right,
it would be an engagement with Vicarious to continue to assist us in this capacity.
Right. I think with Katie, exactly. We all
yeah.
agree. This, we just don't have the talent in-house. They're doing a phenomenal
yeah.
job. I think Katie was saying, is this something that we could, you know, over time, you know,
yeah, we look at that all the time as we look at the budget
totally.
And what the financial impact is and what staffing needs we have that becomes a factor in all of those
yeah,
conversations.
Totally.
So is the e-newsletter, is that our template then that we could take away at
yeah.
the end of the
yeah.
day?
Yeah, we are
yeah.
building you a template,
yeah.
Working with village staff, the village president to finalize that, and then it actually is yours. So,
yeah.
you know, if
so
you
we,
wanted
if
to...
we got...
If okay. you got a graphic designer, yeah. I mean, this, it is an expertise. You know, it's in design. I don't do that even. We have team members that do. We have two that do that. But,
mm-hmm.
yeah, so that would be a specific skill set you'd have to have.
And just one point of clarification, that 1500, just to be clear, proposes that staff would take in-house all of the content, writing, editing, establishment, you know,
yeah.
strategizing. We would be asking Vicarious for that, for, you know, those dollars to help us with the layout and the graphic
yeah.
design in those programs.
Which,
yeah.
quite frankly, I did that once upon a time many moons ago. It's tremendously time-consuming.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
No, I agree. It's a good price.
Yeah,
so while Sarah
so
Lisa and I can do editing, you might not want to trust us with the graphic
yeah.
design.
Okay,
so
any further questions for Melanie? Yeah,
I
mean,
to get editing.
Great presentation. Otherwise, I think we should go ahead and take the vote on this motion. Please, clerk.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bochner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Very good. It passes. Congratulations. Thank
you.
Melanie, appreciate all your help. Okay, I need a motion to go into executive.
I move to enter into executive session to discuss litigation involving the village that is pending, then also the purchase of lease of real estate, I'm sorry, the purchase or lease of real property for the use of the village, including whether a particular parcel should be acquired.
Second.
Okay. The vote? You need a vote?
Yeah. Yeah, we're not going to return to Zoom.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to
okay.
leave Zoom. So we'll just
There'll
need to
no
go
vote.
Into executive session.
Right, and there's
you
no
take...
vote after executive
right.
session.
Yeah,
as we
none.
Come out of
right. So we're going to,
yes.
coming, yeah, we're going
yes,
into
we
executive, so we need a vote.
Yes.
Okay.
And a roll call.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Bochner?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.